Today's topic is crypto custody, and we have Paul Quigley with us. He is a CEO and co-founder of Liberato. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Michelle. Thank you very much for having me join you.
Yes, I'm super excited. Where are you now?
We are located in Boulder, Colorado, and Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Awesome. And tell us your story.
Liberato is a startup crypto digital asset custody platform, and we are bringing a solution to the market we feel meets a substantial need as digital assets and cryptocurrency are now becoming much more mainstream. And we feel that in order to really support large-scale consumer and merchant adoption, we need to have a solution that makes it easy or easier for the merchants and consumers to custody their assets. We are working with several different partners on the platform, and we are going through the regulatory process right now. So we really can't talk much about that. But the objective of the company is actually to provide a really critical piece of infrastructure for this next stage of financial services and banking. We see the need and the importance of strong partnerships with banks. We believe that banks will have a digital strategy by 2021. And in order for them to be able to capture new customers and new types of customers, we see a sub-custody arrangement to be a critical part of their strategy, and we were supporting that. Our technology is very different than what banks currently have. So we don't really see a lot of build it your own. We see an opportunity to provide custody and compliance as a service. And as you well know, because you've been in this space for such a long time as well, that the compliance requirements and compliance being KYC and AML are very high for digital assets. And so a lot of that is above what banks are required to maintain. So we actually think that coming in with a complete solution will make adoption easier for a bank.
There are only a few custodians for crypto out there. What distinguishes Liberato from the others?
Custody is actually really a vault. We've heard the term custody quite a bit, but really what you're looking at building and what you're looking to provide is, if you think about fiat currency and you think about paper money and gold, you would hold those in a safe and a vault. But what we're doing is we're building the digital equivalent of that for crypto assets and digital assets. The difference is really on the market that we're approaching. There's a number of different companies in the institutional space, and we certainly will be happy to take institutional funds, but we really see that the opportunity to drive greater consumer adoption is in the merchant category and in the consumer category. And there are also participants in the market, particularly exchanges, who are trying to diversify their revenue base, and they're adding crypto custody as part of their offering. I think those will continue to be important because leaving your assets on an exchange create a risk. So the other differentiator is our ability to work almost seamlessly with decentralized finance. And so from a DeFi perspective, we see a lot of growth in the DeFi space. And again, being able to custody your assets and be able to actively engage in the DeFi space is an important offering for both merchants as well as consumers. So that's where we see the difference.
Awesome. And then do you think that merchants need such services?
They do. So right now, if you are a merchant and you're interested in trying to grow your customer base and your customers are paying for goods and services with cryptocurrency, unless you have a mechanism to handle that, you have no place to recognize the revenue and hold the asset. So today, if you accept cryptocurrency, it's a very cumbersome process And most of the merchants who are dealing with it today are actually converting at point of sale. Shortly thereafter, they're converting it to fiat currency because their books, from an accounting perspective and from a general ledger financial perspective, there's no way for them to recognize the asset. Mm-hmm. And today, banks have merchant accounts and they can recognize fiat currency and they can book that revenue and transfer the cash. In cryptocurrency, because it's both the transaction and the settlement process, they don't have a mechanism to hold a digital asset. So we really see that to be an important missing element right now in the general ledger and balance sheet for a merchant. It's our opinion that if the merchant's not able to accommodate a cryptocurrency as a transfer of value, then the adoption is going to be slowed down with consumers and even on the B2B side. So we really feel that this is a critical piece of infrastructure that a merchant will be very interested in adding. And again, that's why we think the partnerships with banks are very important. Mm-hmm. Because from a banking perspective, this becomes an additional capability that they would offer to the market and be able to then offer to their customers through merchant services or through consumer banking.
How much knowledge do merchants need to know about cryptocurrency or even use a custodian? And also, what should the volume be like for them?
How much knowledge do you need to have about cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, in order to use a crypto custodian for, I'm a small business and I'm making some money on my website and we decide to accept crypto.
Right. You really don't need a lot of knowledge. What you need to know is the asset that you're choosing to accept payment in. Mm-hmm. And so let's say it would be Bitcoin or Ethereum or some of the other larger cryptocurrencies. So a lot of what we're doing is behind the scenes, if you will, that allow the merchant to just accept the transfer of value, whether it's in a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin or it's in a lesser known but equally important digital asset. And I think that's one of the challenges we have in this space. We have an awful lot of different blockchain protocols that have emerged since 2016, 2019 with the run-up of the ICOs. And I think what's happening now is that we'll see some consolidation mm-hmm. in that. And unless you have a particular interest as a merchant, I don't really think it matters. It's really the transfer of value at the time of sale. You don't really need to know a lot. I think the other thing you need to know, which is the same thing you would know in fiat currency, is you would want to know what your balances are, just like you would need to know what your cash balances are from a cash flow perspective. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea is to actually move us away from the fairly technical interface that we've had for the last 8 years as the model has been developed. I think we're now moving into a place where ease of use is really important around for user adoption. Mm-hmm. I hope that answers your question, but I really think that it should start to be ubiquitous. It'll mm-hmm. take us a few years to get there, but it should be treated just like any other asset class that you're dealing with in a business.
What is the volume though to even start thinking about accepting cryptocurrency? So if I'm making $100,000 per month versus $1 million per month, I think it's really different, right? And say if I make $50 a month and I wanted to accept crypto, is it even worth it? I guess this is not advice for business owners out there. I'm just asking just a question that I'm curious about.
So right now, I think the comparison is really around the way the payment rails you're using today, whether you're making $100,000 or $50,000. Today, it's just another form of payment. And what will happen will be that there are existing payment rails like MasterCharge, Visa, PayPal, and others where you can accept payment. Those payment rails are looking at cryptocurrency as well as a settlement layer to decrease the time between point of sale and settlement with a financial institution. Right now, banks are the settlement buffer between the merchant and the receipt of cash. What's unique and I think really important for cryptocurrency is that the transaction and the settlement are all in the same process. So there's really no latency. So I think any forward-thinking bank is going to be looking at this and they're saying, we really need to get involved in this space. It's a different customer type. And it's not an either or, I think it's a both. And the cost for a merchant to enter into the crypto space, as long as they have a custody arrangement, I think is actually fairly inexpensive. Because with a merchant like MasterCard or Visa or others, there's a transaction fee, there's a percentage of sale fee, and there are other costs in terms of receipt of cash. And there are buffer referral accounts and buffer accounts and things like that are currently in place in the fiat system. I think it would be less expensive actually on a transaction basis for a merchant to accept cryptocurrency if the user interface and the accounting interface is clear and understandable. I would like to believe the merchants would be adopting this as long as it was clear to them, adopting it very quickly, and then actually being able to offer that to their customers as a form of payment, where today with a POS device, when you use your debit card or your credit card, you're using a debit or a credit function. Some of our partners are actually working with point of service providers where you're now offering debit, credit, or digital asset. And the consumer decides behind the scenes which digital asset they want to use. That's happening as well.
Yes, I think giving consumers an option is is really good because then they can choose.
Right. I absolutely agree. And I think, again, this is infrastructure. So we need to give the consumer choice. We need to give the merchant choice. If the merchant wants to convert those assets to fiat currency, then that's fine. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to convert them to fiat currency, can hold them as a digital asset. Right now, that's missing. Now, the other thing that's important, especially in the economic situation we're in right now, is where we're in a near zero interest rate environment, the merchant, if they have cash, can actually transfer their cash to stable coins and then actually custody them on the platform and then enter the DeFi market and get a return on their assets, where they would not be able to do that in a fiat, especially in timed instruments like CDs and others. It's really very difficult from a treasury function to gain any return. So I think that this opens up another door for merchants to embrace digital custody.
Let's define some terms just for people who don't understand. Sure. We're trying to understand this. What is a stable coin?
A stable coin is a digital asset, and the digital asset is kept at a specific value, usually a dollar, if we're using US or a euro. There's no volatility in the asset, which is one of the things that has happened in digital asset crypto markets. There's been a lot of volatility in the assets. What a stable coin offers is exactly what it says. It's a stable value over time. And so if you wanted to invest or use a stable coin in a digital economy, it would be equivalent to a US dollar. And that's important from a balance sheet, from a cash flow, and from an investment perspective, because you've removed volatility of the asset from the equation. So now you can start dealing with predictable price.
And what is DeFi?
DeFi is decentralized finance. It started in early 2018 as a way to disintermediate banking services, particularly around savings in terms of liquidity pools and lending. And so there are a number of different projects that have started and continue to evolve to support the decentralized, meaning non-central function of lending and liquidity pools.
How does the insurance pass do work? Will they be protected? How could they be protected? And what are some of the additional protection for them?
Sure. Good question. One of the things that the cryptocurrency market has had since the very beginning is it's basically an uninsured risk. It's considered a highly volatile segment of the market. And one of the things that's happened with cryptocurrency is that the nature of cryptocurrency is an asset transfer. So if I'm selling something to you and paying for it or being paid in crypto, then what happens as soon as the keys are transferred, it's my asset. One of the things that's also occurred is that until DeFi, there was no lending or liquidity pool in which you could create structured loans to then lend out to customers. So there's no FDIC insurance in cryptocurrency. And so what's happening is that if you hold cryptocurrency until custody platforms were created, you would hold the cryptocurrency on the exchange, or you would hold the cryptocurrency that you had in a hard wallet, mm-hmm. which is offline storage that you would hold literally on your person, near your person, or in some secure location. However, mm-hmm. If that hardware wallet was stolen, with it would go your assets. If mm-hmm. that hardware failed, with that would go your assets. And so what custody platforms are doing are bringing a level of redundancy and also a level of insurability into the market, which I think is critically important if you are looking at providing services to merchants and consumers as well. So what's also occurring in the custody platform, if you divide it into three sections, there's a concept technologically and operationally called cold storage. And cold storage is just what it sounds like. Your cryptocurrency assets are offline. They're not connected to any network. And literally they're in cold storage. You can get them out, but it's not going to be something that happens instantaneously. Usually it takes a few days and the process is more automated, but it's designed purposefully that if you initiate an order to move assets from cold storage, there are usually several reviews of that and confirmations that you are who you are and the asset transfer is a legitimate request. Mm-hmm. That's the furthest to the left. In the middle, there's this concept of warm storage, which means it's not cold storage, it's more readily available, but it's not as immediately available for transactions as, say, a hot wallet. So if I were to draw a parallel between banking and crypto custody, I would call the warm storage equivalent to your checking account. You may have a number of different assets in there, but you're making a decision with online banking or with a check to transfer a different amount, not your account. A hot wallet is an instantaneous purchase. So if you were getting a cup of coffee and you wanted to pay for that with cryptocurrency, you could actually have a small amount. Our recommendation would be a small amount of digital asset on your phone, for example, and you could use it for a small, instantaneous, almost like petty cash. Our platform supports all three of those dimensions, but the majority of what we see would be cold storage. And then as people get more familiar with this model, they'll move some of it to warm storage, like a checking account, and then they'll move even less of it to hot wallets or what I would consider petty cash. All of those are insured. Now, what's happening is the insurance market for cold storage is more predictable. So what we're doing is we're offering that as part of the solution. And then if people want to move assets into warm storage or hot, there are different insurance levels that they can purchase. Obviously, the risk for loss or breach is highest in a hot wallet. So if you wanted to insure that, you certainly could do that. And we have underwriters that we work with that would price the additional insurance accordingly. Mm-hmm. That's how you would do it. And so you're insuring for a loss, and loss could either be loss of a device or a loss of the asset value or both.
Okay. And I guess as long as the merchants place the cryptocurrency into the custody, then they will be insured.
Correct.
Awesome.
Correct. If you think about it, it's really the same kind of insurance if you were working with fiat currency. There are a lot of parallels. It's just digital assets, and it's moving at the speed of digital assets. And so what happens is today, if you have a savings account or a money market account, banks are offering insurance up to a certain level, dollar value per account. And I don't see that being any different. I think what's happening is the underwriters are learning from all of us in this space what the characteristics are of cold storage and what warm storage looks like and what the hot wallets look like. And I think what will happen is the insurance market will continue to stabilize around that. And in some cases, we may decide to self-insure once we reach a critical mass of assets under management.
Okay, got it. Let's talk about security, because I think security is really important since you are holding so much of these assets.
Mm-hmm.
How is the company thinking about security, and how are you securing the company so that I can trust you with my cryptocurrency?
Sure.
Besides insurance, of course.
So the non-technical answer to that question, security is a substantial ongoing investment. We have to secure three different things simultaneously. We have to secure that your identity is indeed who you are. We have to secure assets. Mm-hmm. And we also have to secure that the assets in storage are not at risk. The vault is not breached. Mm-hmm. So we're using state-of-the-art technology to secure the vault, the custody platform. Mm-hmm. And we're using several different security layers, which I can't elaborate on here, but they far exceed the requirements for SOX 2. So we are actually using several, and I expect we'll continue to evolve those, different ways of confirming you are who you are and the asset request that you're making is actually a legitimate asset request. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the same kind of interactive security approach that we need to take for any of the things that are happening in banking and financial services. The other thing I can say is that underneath all of that, we have an AI, artificial intelligence layer that's looking at patterns. It's also looking at risk. Risk has many different dimensions to it. And we're looking at characteristics, almost behavioral, that will tell us that your request is actually consistent with other requests you've made and in the same locations or close proximity to your current location. If you are making a request, or what appears to be a request, from the other side of the world, that's highly unlikely it's you. And so those algorithms will continue to learn. Mm-hmm. And I think that people will be receptive to maybe some inconvenience if some requests are challenged, mm-hmm. if they know the trade-off is their assets are being secured and they could trust it. Your question's a really good one, but I think there are different levels in it. And there's always a balance because you want to make sure that you're mindful of the user interface to make that as intuitive and straightforward as possible, but not create vulnerability. And so just like your online banking would be, you expect some interrogation if it's an unusual balance request, or you may be broadcasting or making the request from a different device. So these are important considerations.
That sounds really awesome. And we probably don't want to know all the security internal controls anyway. So because right. we want you as a company to be safe. How about basis point? Is the price that you are charging or is going to charge, is that competitive with the market?
It's actually, so obviously we have some colleagues and competitors in the market before us. So we're mindful of where the prices are. What we're already seeing is when we originally started on this journey, we saw one uniform price range. And now what we're seeing already, and again, this goes back to my earlier comment about the insurance markets, getting a better sense of how to segment the market and price risk. What we're seeing is that cold storage custody would be included in the basis point spread. And then if the consumer or merchant wanted additional insurance, they could buy that for warm storage or for hot wallets. Again, on the merchant side, the need for hot wallets, I think, is fairly limited. The merchants are much more interested in the warm wallet and cold storage. And then again, that goes back to the treasury function that they have. The pricing spread in the market is anywhere between 50 to 71, 72 basis points. Mm-hmm. And the way things are priced is assets under management. What is very realistic is that, and this is a fairly fluid number, but if you have a small balance, you should expect to pay a monthly fee until you get to a certain threshold in terms of the asset balance, and then it would switch over to an assets under management pricing model, because there is a cost to support the platform and provide the service, and obviously the insurance and the compliance overhead with that. So if you have a small balance, you've got $1,000, $10,000 in cryptocurrency, we would certainly welcome you as a customer, but you'd probably be paying a monthly fee. And then when you get to a certain threshold, and we're still working that out, if you get to a certain threshold, it would switch over to an assets under management model, which is actually our primary way of looking at the market.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, I think pricing transparency is critical in our space. I think part of what drew people into cryptocurrency was the transparency. And I think that's also part of what we need, one of the key elements we need to maintain as this market matures. And I think that there's a lot of value that merchants and consumers get from this service. So I have no problem at all explaining the pricing.
How long does it take to integrate the custodian with the account? For merchants, they have a website and mm-hmm. sometimes they use Stripe or PayPal on the back end or some other payment companies.
Mm-hmm.
When they accept crypto,
yes,
how do they integrate the custodian part of it into that flow?
Yeah, there are a couple of different ways of approaching this, and we're working on all of them at the same time. If access to cryptocurrency is through a banking partner, then the integration from our perspective is between Liberato and the bank. Mm-hmm. And then we help the bank offer that through their existing channel to the merchant. So it would be seen to the merchant as an additional capability offered through the bank. Those pipes are already in place. The second is if a merchant wanted to work with us directly, certainly could do that as well. Our structure is set up to capitalize on API integration with secure APIs.
Mm-hmm.
And so depending upon the capability of the merchant and how their treasury function works, we would actually integrate there. And there are a number of different approaches and models and governance processes mm-hmm. that we would use based on the direct access. The same thing happens. That same API connection or app connection for the consumer is also possible. We see the bank and the merchant integration is first and second. And shortly after that, we see the capability for a mobile app for the consumer. We may end up accelerating that because we have a lot of consumer interest. People are amassing digital asset value on hardware wallets or in the decentralized finance environment, and they would really like to park their money, if you will, their park their assets on a custody platform, and then they can always take them off when they start to re-engage with the DeFi platform, most moving them as a portfolio during the course of a week. And so the other thing that's also important for people to understand in the digital currency space is that unlike stock equity markets, the digital asset market operates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So there's no downtime. We actually have to make sure that the assets are available 24/7. That's also a little bit different when you compare the, say, the mutual funds or money markets or bank services.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Yeah. It's exciting. It's really exciting. I think that more and more people will become aware of it. I'm looking forward to that. I think that one of our challenges will be education. Mm-hmm. And I'm really looking forward to engaging with people on that as we get more and more use cases. I would like to be able to de-identify them, but share the experience so that more people start to work mm-hmm. with it and see it as a necessary way of protecting their assets.
Mm-hmm. So one of the other questions I have is, if you're a merchant and mm-hmm. you're interested, because I think cryptocurrency is going to be probably now and the future, and it would be nice to actually accept it as a form of payment.
Yes, I agree.
Is there a section of the market that you're focused on? For example, what kind of merchants are you focusing on? Retailers? Are you focusing on certain type of merchants? Or it doesn't matter. Whoever is interested in mm-hmm. a custodian, you are willing to work with them.
Yeah, good question. I don't really want to share a lot of our business plan on that, but we've been approached by a couple different segments of the merchant category. And I think that lend themselves to cryptocurrency more so than others. But we're not going to be restrictive on that. I think it's actually more often than not the leadership team of the merchant and the merchant having a clear understanding of how they would engage mm-hmm. a crypto customer.
Okay.
Many of the conversations we've had actually become a branding and positioning conversation, mm-hmm. and we become the means to an end to help them. Because if you don't know how to approach a customer who is a cryptocurrency holder, then it doesn't really matter if you have the tool set or not. And mm-hmm. I don't mean to sidestep your question. It's a good question. But I think there are some categories within the retailers that are more attractive mm-hmm. or attracted to this. And then, but if we found a motivated merchant who really understood how they would engage a cryptocurrency customer, we would be more than happy to support them.
Yeah, and there's also AUP, right? Acceptable use and yes. regulations as well. I'm just wondering. So I guess in general, it's open. How do people contact you if they're interested?
We have a website. We're very easy to get there. There's a contact page on the website, and we're more than happy to respond to those. We will probably continue to use that. It's Liberato, liberato.io. It is not liberato.com. It's liberato.io. And if you type in digital assets in Liberato, our website will come up, and we're happy to engage people in the discussion in terms of where they are and look forward to that.
And is there anything else I have not asked you that you wanted to share?
No, I think you've covered a lot. We've covered the key elements of why you would do it, how would you ensure it, how would you integrate it, and why would you want to open up this form of payment? And then obviously how you would be able as a merchant to be able to record those transactions and keep that. It's an emerging asset class on your balance sheet. I think those are really important. And we've also talked about insurance. I think we've covered, you've asked some really good questions that cover the whole market.
Yeah, it helps because I used to work at a payments company. But have we talked about treasury services yet?
We haven't, but we could. I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, let's do that. Because one of the most exciting thing about sending money for someone to keep besides protecting it,
yes.
and make sure ensure that it's not stolen because you might forget your keys
right.
you know, until the whole key part of crypto is a lot better. It's easy to get your private keys,
right?
Or even forget your cold storage and leave it somewhere else. Those things are really small. If you put money or crypto in a custody, you can also earn interest from it. And you also have treasury services.
Correct. So what that means for your listeners is if you are, let's say you're a merchant, we'll just use that example as a use case. So if you're a merchant, it's like cash management. And you want to be able to have cash for your operations, but hopefully you have cash in excess of operations. And normally what you would do is you would invest those funds to increase the return for your organization. And those treasury functions can be fairly sophisticated or they could be very straightforward. And so in the fiat world, you have a number of different investment mechanisms available to you to invest those excess funds. And they have different degrees of liquidity, meaning ability to convert those back to the cash that you started with, hopefully with some return within a defined period of time. And so what happens in the cryptocurrency space was until the DeFi market started to emerge, if you converted your cash to a digital asset, then the asset actually just sat there. And if there was price volatility, if you sold it, you may have gained some appreciation in the asset. However, with the DeFi market and the development of liquidity pools and other instruments, what has happened is that you can now take your cash, convert it to a stable coin. Again, we talked about stable coins earlier in the interview where they maintain a consistent value. There's not the volatility. So you don't have the risk of losing value just by holding the asset. So you have a consistent value, and then you can invest that in any number of different instruments and terms. One of the things that I find most attractive in the DeFi market, especially with liquidity pools, is that you actually have almost instantaneous redeemability of your asset. So today, if you fall in the fiat world, you would maybe buy a 30-day, 60-day, 90-day time deposit. And if you liquidate before that period of time, you would pay a penalty and often lose interest. In the cryptocurrency space, particularly with stable coins, you're able to liquidate immediately, and the interest payments are actually, depending upon the program, they could be paid every 3 days or every week or some other periodic payment. So the ability of compounding of your return is actually much more favorable. And I think it's a really important treasury function for merchants. And it often, I think it'll be much more attractive as we are experiencing an extended flat interest rate environment. We can go into other use cases if you'd like, but I think that's a really good way of looking at treasury functions and being able to demonstrate how you can live in both environments, fiat currency and cryptocurrency, and get a return with predictability of your assets.
Awesome. And what is one piece of advice or wisdom that you would like to share with the community?
Educate yourself. Learn. There's a lot of information out there. Generally, and merchants are fairly conservative. And I think that it's important to understand the structure of the market and understand how you would engage that market. Like I mentioned before, I see education to be a very big piece of what we provide. So educate yourself just like you would any other investment and recognize that this platform has tremendous capability and it gives all of that capability to you. And so you have a tremendous amount of power at your fingertips if you know how to use it. And so I would just say educate yourself and learn how the market works.
Awesome. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much. Just appreciate the opportunity to share our story with you.
I think custody and being a custodian of your digital asset is really, really important. So, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.